This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, and Brewers Outlet. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This opening half hour is brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory. With the Sunbury Motors guarantee and a terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way, routine to difficult, it is all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Always a pleasure to be joined by a guy that I think defines a pro's pro, and that is Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle. Rich, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Great to be with you, Steve, as always.
Let's start with Saturday night, 21-7. What stuck out to you about that game on Saturday night?
Well, a couple things. One, let's start with the line play. Both sides of the ball, I thought, was exceptional for Penn State. And, we just finished the press conference, weekly press conference with James Franklin, and that's what I asked him about, the offensive line. And I think the offensive line has played better than anybody expected. James Franklin singled out Nick Dawkins. Yeah. That was going to happen once.
Yeah.
Nick Dawkins, for how well he's played at center. I think the defensive line, people sometimes overlook the interior of the defensive line. Zane Durant, Devon J. Thomas, Keziah Izzard, Hakeem Beamon, down the list. I'm missing a few, but the bottom line is they played really well Saturday night against a team that prides itself on being very physical. So that's where I would start. And then, as I wrote for a column for today's print edition, the physicality of running backs Nick Singleton and Catron Allen is something to behold. Both of them welcome contact. Sometimes they don't avoid it, they welcome it. And what Nick Singleton did on that 3rd and 7 play, when he pancaked the defensive end, then caught a pass from Drew Aller and ran over a defensive back to get the first down, was something that I'll remember for a long time.
That was, you need to play guys that play winning football, and that's a winning football play by Singleton that sets the tone, I think, for an entire sideline when you see somebody like that do that.
No question about it. Drew Aller said the same thing about the two of them, Nick and Catron, about how it impacts the rest of the offense, and I don't think there's any question about that. The two of them are all about gaining every inch that they can, and they don't care who's in their way. If you're going to try to tackle me, I'm going to try to run you over. And you see it all the time with these guys. I mean, I know more about Nick's background than Catron's, but I could say this. Nick trains at a facility here in Berks County. He's trained there since he was in middle school. And those people continue to rave about him in the weight room. And you've seen it at Penn State as well. Just one of the strongest guys pound for pound, I think, in college football.
And I think what they've done here is the model that a lot of people want to have. Yeah, it's organic, but when the game is over, or even when the season's over, the number of touches each one has is so close that it's keeping the wear and tear as much as possible off their bodies.
that, and I don't think that is an accident whatsoever that their carries are that close. I think it's also to keep both of them happy. I do. I think, and that's fine. You know, because they're two terrific running backs, and one shouldn't be slighted over the other. But it does. They're never worn out at the end of games, and if you split the carries evenly, they're both pretty happy guys. So, I agree with that.
Any quarterback will tell you that the last thing they want is pressure up the middle and in their face. What have you seen in the progress of Zane Durant at that defensive tackle spot that's allowed him to play that way?
Well, it's just quickness. I mean, he's not the biggest defensive tackle in college football by far. To say that standing in front of him after the game at 6'1", 286 pounds, it's something to say, but he's not. But his quickness is something that is exceptional. You and I watched him and know how good he's been, you know, since he was a freshman. You could see it, and it's just he's getting better and better and better. And you saw that Saturday night, that there were times he just exploded past the center or the guard or both to get into the backfield. And then when Tom Allen puts Abdul Carter in that middle of the line, you know, in passing situations, then it's like pick your poison. Who do you want to block? Abdul Carter or Zane Durant? And sometimes Illinois couldn't do either.
What was your thoughts on the play of Drew Aller in the game?
I don't think he was as sharp as he was against Kent State. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I think he played well. He didn't make any mistakes. I think there was a stretch there that I can't remember when it was, but when he missed Khalil Dinkins on the seam route, and then he missed Trey Wallace to the sideline. You know, he threw it harder. He didn't put any air under either pass. But overall, I thought he played solid. He had a solid game, and I wouldn't be surprised if he has a big game on Saturday against the very vulnerable UCLA pass defense.
Right. Illinois scored in the opening drive of the game. Then after that, the yardage was minimal. For them. They did have a 34-yard run. They had a 36-yard, flip play to McCray. They missed a field goal. But that was it. It was a low-possession game. Only 8 possessions for Illinois in the game. What was your thoughts on the adjustments that Penn State made defensively after the opening drive?
Well, I think, and it's, James Franklin mentioned it after the game. The turning point of the game was Illinois has first and goal at the 2 late in the second quarter.
Right.
And because of the defense and because of the student section, the noise from the student section, Illinois doesn't go forward. They go backwards and 20-some yards, 25 yards or whatever it was, and misses a 45-yard field goal. And to me, that just turned everything around. And then Penn State scores to go ahead in the third quarter, and honestly, I mean, Illinois never crossed midfield until the last minute in the second half, until the last minute of the game. Sometimes after watching hundreds of games, I kind of pick up little things, and Illinois, as
me
you
too.
You know, Steve, they want it to be a one score game. In the fourth quarter, they want to play field position. They have a plan offensively and defensively. Well, once it got to 21-7, they had to throw that out the window, and that's where Penn State started just hammering Luke Altmyer and rushing him. I think where they have 4 sacks in the fourth quarter. So you saw a change. But honestly, it was the stopping the run defensively, making Illinois one-armed, if you will, that changed everything. And really, I never thought after that first and goal from the 2 disintegrated, I never thought Illinois was going to score.
Right, but that's why in the fourth quarter on the broadcast, I just said, look, I said, let's be honest here. Penn State gets one more score of any kind.
Right.
I said, Illinois, there are not enough possessions left in the game for them to send it to overtime. I mean, you just could tell that there's just, because, you know, possessions, the number of possessions are not talked about enough. And you could just tell with the clock and the way the game was playing, they didn't have enough possessions to do anything with it. Which then
And they weren't getting any push at all.
No.
Like, to run the ball. They couldn't run the ball whatsoever. I hate to sound like this, but scores are often deceiving. And I'm not putting this on one young man, but if Xander Zahedak makes 240-yard field goals, and then Penn State also went for it on fourth down instead of trying, I forget what the yards would have been on the field goal. So let's say those three field goals are made. It's 30-7, and you're like, oh, that's about right. They dominated the game after the first possession. Yeah, that's about right. So like I saw people figuratively gnashing their teeth on social media after the game, and I'm like, well, they won by two touchdowns, and Illinois was undefeated and was ranked, and I'll bet you they're going to win 8 or 9 games this year. And can Penn State be better? Oh yeah, they can be better with the field goal kicking, and they can also be better with the penalties, as James said about an hour ago. They've got to be better with the penalties.
Well, here's where the gnashing of teeth comes in, okay? Whatever the spread was, 17, 19, whatever it was, you make the two field goals, it's 20. Okay.
Right.
All right. So I understand where the gnashing of teeth comes from, because this is something I've talked about the last couple of years.
Yep.
You're going to get more and more complaints because of how the spread played out as opposed to how the game played out. Because your own personal money is on the line.
Right.
That aside, when it does, look, we all see what the impact of field goal kicking is in the NFL. It's a huge part of the offense. You don't even have to get to the red zone to get points.
By the way, saw it yesterday as a Packers fan.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So now you get to this point. One thing about a month into the season, it's a decision you didn't want to have to make. But how interesting moving forward is this decision that will impact whomever is doing the kicking, and if it's not Sander, how it might impact him?
Yeah, I mean it's tough. You're four games into the season, and you've got there's no break right now. You have two games, and UCLA is really struggling. I mean, let's be honest. And they've got to play a 9 a.m. Pacific time game Saturday at In-State College. But the fact is, somebody needs to step up, whoever that may be, even if it's Xander. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen this week.
But
somebody's got to step up in the kicking game, because then you play at USC, then you play at Wisconsin, then you play Ohio State at home. Those three games. You're going to need a accurate kicker.
Yeah, and we'll find out how it plays out. That's the only thing anybody can do. James has touted Tyler Warren, and he has shown a lot in the first four games. What are your thoughts on his impact to the offense as a tight end, H-back, and basically all around good guy?
Yeah, I mean he is, and he's really. He's almost, when he takes a direct snap, he's almost taking Bo Prabula's role.
Yep.
In a way. And but he's been very effective. And, the blocking, too. I mean, that's the one thing, you see it. I'm sure Jack sees it, obviously. Yep. But the blocking, he's a terrific blocker. And I think the whole tight end group, right now with him, Khalil Dinkins, and Luke Reynolds, I think they've done a really good job blocking, in addition to the offensive line. Tyler Warren's a really terrific player, and I would think he's got the best chance of any of the Penn State players right now, again, 8 games left in the season, to win a national award. I think he's got the best chance.
It's interesting. People always bring up the flow of the offense because suddenly Bo comes in the game or suddenly Tyler Warren comes in the game. And this, you know, we can ask questions, but like, this will be a conversation piece for Rich and I right here. Penn State practices this way all the time, so that actually is the natural flow because they don't just like, okay, let's practice the packages now. They actually like, okay, work it in here, work it in there. So it's actually, they're used to what it is because of practice. It's not just they do it in the game.
Yeah, no, I understand that. It's not something foreign to them. I don't know how people stand on this. I don't like wasting a position. And what you're doing with wasting a position when you bring Bo in, you split your Aller out.
Right.
And, come on. He's not catching a pass. I mean, they tried it once, and in the Peach Bowl, it didn't really work. And I don't like that. Maybe I'm a football purist. I don't like that in general. It's nothing to do with Penn State. I just like, hey, who's your quarterback? Okay, I want him on the field in his position. That's me. That doesn't mean you could bring, if you want to bring Bo in and then take Drew out for a play, sure. Okay. I could see that. You know, but I don't like, you know, I didn't like it with, you know, when Penn State did it with Trace McSorley and with Sean Clifford either. I guess I'm a football purist.
All right, so now this will be the first time that we get into a game with where now Penn State gets to see the new league because three of the next five are against the new part of the league. UCLA, USC,
right.
And then Washington after Wisconsin and Ohio State. How interested are you to see how those four teams out west react to all the travel they have to go through?
Well, yeah. I mean, UCLA, I don't know if we've talked about it on your show, UCLA is traveling the most miles of anybody in the country this year. They've already been to Hawaii and Louisiana to play LSU.
Yep.
They're coming to Penn State this week, and then 2 weeks later, they're coming to Rutgers.
Yep.
I mean, schedule maker didn't do the Bruins any favors. I think it's interesting. USC hasn't played yet on the East Coast, but they played at Michigan. And we'll see what happens when Penn State goes out to USC. You know this, and James just mentioned it publicly for the first time, that Penn State is leaving next Thursday for Los Angeles. And
right.
I guarantee you, did a very thorough research on that, talked to NFL teams, college teams, go down the list. So they're leaving Thursday. I'm interested to see how that works out. And, you know, next year Penn State plays UCLA in the Rose Bowl stadium. And, you know, it's going to be interesting, but I think by the time UCLA gets done with its next three games at Penn State, I forget who they have home next week, and then at Rutgers, those guys are going to be weary.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, you can't do it based on this season, but I want to see after 3 years or so, what does it look like for them? In terms of the back and forth, what kind of wear and tear there happens to be. Because I know when it comes to teams going west, 14 of them have to go west. And of the 14, 8 have bye weeks, including Penn State the next week. The other 6 have home games. So that part was figured in. I don't know what was figured in for the 4 out west.
Yeah. So UCLA plays at Penn State, Minnesota home, at Rutgers, bye, at Nebraska, home against Iowa, at Washington, and then finishes with 2 home games. So, yeah, it's going to be fascinating. USC has to go to Minnesota this week, Maryland in 2 weeks, then Washington in another 2 weeks, then they're basically home the rest of the season. So, yeah, I think I think, doesn't Oregon play at Michigan, or am I getting that wrong?
I know Oregon has to host Ohio State. That's next week. Then after that, I'm not sure.
Oregon's at Michigan on November 2nd, the same day of the Ohio State-Penn State game. So, wait till I'm curious. You're talking about football.
Yeah.
How about basketball?
Basketball, okay. They're all going to be two. When they comes out, right. I'm sure it's all two game road trips for those guys.
Yeah.
That way, it's five.
Right.
So I know Oregon and Washington and both have to come here. I just didn't look and see the sequencing on them as to who they're playing besides Penn State. Penn State going out there, they're going to play on a Saturday at Pauley, and they're going to play on a Tuesday at the Galen Center.
Yeah.
Penn State's going to go out there on a Friday. They're going to be there for four nights, essentially.
The Saturday Tuesday surprised me because in the Pac-12, they played Thursday Saturday or Friday Sunday.
And that's what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
But evidently, somebody on TV came up with a different idea.
Yeah, obviously. So Oregon is at Purdue, at Michigan, at Wisconsin, the rest of the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
My friend, it is always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your valuable time.
Steve, thank you. I appreciate it.
He's one of the best. Rich Scarsella, Reading Eagle. It's brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key, Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle. I'm just listing some of your insurance needs. They take care of them all. And you have a multitude of insurance needs. They want to make sure that you're fully insured. They also want to make sure that they save you money wherever they can. It is all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Mets and Braves are playing a doubleheader today because they're right now tied. So they have to finish the regular season out. It is scoreless in the bottom of the second. One thing that should not happen, do not in any way, shape, or form criticize Major League Baseball over this. On this one. Right? Keep in mind that in the past week we've had death and destruction from Hurricane / Tropical Storm Helene. And from Florida to Georgia, the North and South Carolina, and other parts of the country. There's been death and destruction, and that takes all of our efforts to help out wherever we can there, and this is just a baseball game. So if they have to play today, fine. They play today. It's just baseball. If they have to somehow play a one-game playoff tomorrow, that's fine. It's just baseball. It doesn't matter if you finish the World Series on November 2nd as opposed to November 4th. It's been a disaster down there. And because it has been a natural disaster, we have to do everything we can to make sure every single person is helped out that can be helped. So it's only baseball. So it's scoreless in the bottom of the second, although the Braves are threatening with first and second two outs. So there you are. Saturday night. I know we have to come up with our, you know, they want us to come up with a player on each side of the ball that could be an impact guy. I picked Nick Singleton on offense, and I picked Zane Duran on defense. And Singleton, I think, becomes an obvious one because, but it also goes to the fact that I think he's become so good and so effective as a receiver to add to what he does in the running game. And you saw in that one where he got the first down, where he caught it and then overpowered everybody. That's why in the post game we talked to him about how much work he's put in as a receiver. Durant, because to be honest with you, you watch the video and it's like, I really liked his matchup. Like, I really liked the matchups in the middle. And I know Brian had talked about it as well. And again, because we can do all the analytics we want. People can do FBIs and all that, you know, as predictors of performance and things like that. But the bottom line is, it's all about matchups. Which ones can you win? Which battles can you win? I just thought the Durant matchup in the middle, no matter which it was, the center guard, didn't matter, was in his favor. That's why, you know, when it was my turn, that's why I went with those players. Because I thought they'd win their one-on-one matchups. And they both won their matchups, as did Catron Allen, who was just tremendous again on Saturday night. The crowd was phenomenal. The atmosphere was second to none. It's amazing how people can sustain that kind of energy as a collective group for 3.5 hours like that. It's amazing that the fans are like that. That's why it is, they call it the greatest show in college football. Well, you're the ones that make it that way, without question.
I was working, so I was listening to you guys on the app. And my favorite part of the whole game was Coach Franklin's halftime interview.
Oh, yes, yes. Where he used twice.
A colorful term.
Yes, colorful, yes.
He was not wrong, but it was just, it was amusing for him to be that annoyed. How's that?
Well, he's not incorrect.
No.
So let's get into that part for a moment. Because the play he's talking about that he was really furious about involved Tony Rojas. Rojas is trying to... Luke Altmyer breaks the pocket, takes off. Rojas is going to get him. One of the wide receivers, I think it was Hank Beatty, right? Is trying to get over to block. And Rojas explodes him in the middle of the play. Right? And they called it a blindside play. Excuse me. Hey, let's get into something straight here. Rojas is looking at Altmyer. He's going point A to point B. The person that's attempting to make the block is the one that's going after Rojas. He can't help if Rojas is in the right spot and blows him up. That's his problem. It's that kind of call that, in my opinion, shows no feel for the game. And I mentioned it specifically in the broadcast, and I meant it. Right? You have to have a feel for the game. And when you look at that, you're like, what are you doing here? Okay, that makes no sense. Okay, if Rojas makes a slight detour to hit this guy, then I can understand it. But he's not even looking at this guy. He's trying to look at the other guy, and he's just trying to get there, and the other guy's trying to throw his body somehow in front. Like, what are we doing here? What are you calling that? Now, it turned out it means nothing in the scheme of the game because that's the segment, the sequence that Rich talked about, the snap over the head, the penalties, things like that, that derailed Illinois. That was that sequence. So they missed the field goal. So in the end, it didn't affect anything.
Hey, Steve, we have Doug from Wellsboro on the line.
Okay, hello, Doug. How are you today?
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Great to hear from you. Hope you're doing great.
The first thing I was calling about was that Tony Rojas call. What was the call on the field? Personal foul? Blindside block? Not block, but what was the call?
The call was I don't even think he announced it. First of all, he had the wrong number. He said it was 3 and it was 13. And they just called personal foul. That's all they called.
Was it unsportsmanlike conduct?
Nope, they just called personal foul. And that's the only announcement that was made. We're watching it, and we're like, what the heck is going on here? And we're looking at it. Well, it's not on the quarterback. Right? Well, then we're looking, and Jack was the one that saw that he, and I think it was Beatty, collided, got hit, whatever. And that's where the flag went down. Well, Rojas isn't even looking at Beatty. Rojas is out there trying to make the play to get to Altmyer, trying to make a play to the ball. The other guy is trying to then get him somehow get in front of him, at least get a piece of him, and he got blown up. I mean, that's a football play. You don't throw a flag on that. I mean, okay, that's a feel for the game call where, like, you can't make that. Conversely, in the fourth quarter, Illinois is trying to at least get something back. I think it's after Catron scored the touchdown. They throw a pass on the side, and Pat Bryant hits Jalen Kimber directly, like two hands behind, and shoves him down in the open field. Oh, you missed that one. Really? You didn't see that one? Okay. Like, there's nobody else around.
That block in the back was blatantly obvious. I don't know how they missed that. I went back and looked at the Tony Rojas play. Tony wasn't even looking at the guy coming towards him from the right.
That's right.
Maybe at the last second he turned his head or something. It's not like he was seeking him out. He was focused on the ball carrier, and he just shed whoever was coming towards him. So I'm at a loss for words on that.
Well, again, what's Tony looking at? The ball. He's trying to get the ball carrier. Now, the guy trying to at least maybe get a piece of Rojas, okay, because he's trying to help his quarterback out. That's fine. But you can't call him for a penalty when he's not. I mean, if you don't deviate your lane in trying to get to somebody, you can't make that call. Right? You can't make that call.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Do they still send clips to the officials, the league office, every week?
Yes, they do. Yes,
do they ever anything back?
I'll have to ask James about that. I'll have to ask him about that at some point.
Okay.
See if you got any reaction to it. Sal Wormley got poked in the eye. J.B. Nelson got poked in the eye. There's one other defensive player that got poked in the eye. It's like, that last I checked, that was hands to the face.
Right.
Not one was called. Like, okay.
How do they teach field goal kicking? Do they teach to pick a point in the stands where they're aiming at before they put their head down on the ball? How does this operation work?
Okay. Well, first of all, it starts with Dzanski and the holder. You've got to get the ball back. I think it's 1.28. So you've got to get that ball back that fast. It's got to be in a spot where either Riley Thompson or Bo Perbula, who are the two primary holders, can get it, and there's ease with which they get the laces pointing in the right direction. As for the kickers, each hash mark brings with it a different subtle type of kick as opposed to down the middle. So it's just them as to how they want to swing and the stroke they have to take. It's almost like a golfer and what they have to do in some ways. And all three guys have gone through it. Now, did they make the right choice based on practice to start the season? Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about from my personal observation, watching, because believe me, I watched it every day. Right? Now, I don't know I have no idea what they're going to do. I'm going to have to watch this week and see what they want to do, because I thought after the Bowling Green game, things were going to be fine. Those were two tough misses in that game on Saturday that could have made life a little bit easier for everybody else.
You said they were pretty close in practice in the preseason.
There were
points difference, something like that.
Yeah, it was like, I think one was like at 86 or 87%. One was at 84. One was at 83. All right. I mean, that's how close it was between them. But you can just tell, just watching it, who he really felt like had the lead, especially the ability of the one thing Sander does, he gets the ball straight up in the air fast. He's a very difficult guy to block.
And he also kicks a fairly straight ball. I mean, I'd be really concerned if it was... I mean, his ball spins end over end, and it's a clean, straight line for the most part.
Right.
It's not like spinning, you know, like the Ole Miss kicker kicked it sideways, or if the ball flies through the air. But I just... In the game, he is not either picking a spot on the stands to aim at, or I don't know what's in his head.
Well, let me do something that's at least somewhat subtle in this too. The field was not completely dry on Saturday, and also the field was a little bit longer. Jack and I made that comment in the pregame show. I have no idea, zero, if that made any difference at all, none. But I thought I would at least bring it up, not as an excuse, but just as a commentary on, you know, what under the category of who knows. I mean, I'm sure the last thing Sander would do would be to bring that up. But I'm just saying, you know, it was a little wet, like a little bit. It was a little bit longer, okay? But who knows? You know, nobody's more disappointed than he is, believe me. That's a tough one, especially where I think he felt pretty confident, especially after the preseason. And he felt pretty confident through the first 3 weeks, especially after the Bowling Green game. And I just don't know how it's going to play out. I'm just going to have to see how it plays out this week.
Okay. That's all I have for today. Thanks for taking my questions.
You bet, Doug. No problem. I hope at least I answered some of them.
No, you did great. You could tell the grass was longer, like on TV. You could tell that they had the tarp on for most of the week.
I guess it's a little bit different. Yeah, and I guess they lined the field on Tuesday is when they did it. but when Jack and I walked on the field before the game, we were surprised. We've never, I'm not saying it was like a farmer's field out there, but I mean, by the Beaver Stadium standard, I mean, which is an incredibly high standard, it was a little longer. We were a little surprised it was a little bit longer. How about that?
Yep. Hey, one quick thing. Like you said, I think Brett Bielema has grown up quite a bit from the Wisconsin days. I think James really respects him. It goes both ways. Yeah. Brett played that with what he had. He played that game to win the way he had to win. Limited possessions, that kind of stuff. I mean, I've kind of gotten more respect from Brett as he's gotten older now.
Yeah, what's happened is James on some of the Nike trips got a chance to know him. You know, and that helps. And I know that people have been around him more. He's just he's exponentially more secure as to who he is and what he does. And that's a compliment to him. And I think that most of this game played out the way he hoped it would play out in terms of trying to get to the fourth quarter in a one-score game. I think that made a big difference.
Yep. Okay, thanks for your time today, guys.
Thank you. All right, we'll take a break. Back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could chop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Hour. I have to talk about the Michigan-Minnesota onside kick. I mean, really? I thought the Eagles were pretty impressive yesterday. No?
He's going to need an extra. He's not on the 230. He needs some time tomorrow.
I mean, he needs a paper bag after that. Mm-hmm. I had somebody tell me, well, the heat, what the air conditioning was on for Tampa Bay? I mean, really.
Baker had his own personal ice box on the sidelines.
Yeah. I mean, you do know that Tampa Bay has an indoor facility. They practice indoors. Like, come on. I mean, really. They just got their backsides beat.
That's putting it nicely.